It's the Memorial Day sales event at the DGDG Mazda stores. Capital Mazda, Stevens Creek Mazda, Concord Mazda, and Team Mazda. Hey, it's Sean Del Grande, and we've got over 800 brand new Mazdas with outstanding incentives, like low monthly lease payments and low APR financing. Yep, it's just a great time to buy. So don't miss the Memorial Day sales event at the DGDG Mazda stores in San Jose, Concord, and Vallejo.
Financing on approval of credit.
Coming to you from the heart of Silicon Valley,
this is CUDA Confidential,
the official podcast of the San Jose Barracuda, AHL affiliate of the San Jose Sharks. Now, here's your host, Nick Nolenberger.
Hello, Barracuda fans, and welcome to another edition of CUDA Confidential. I'm Nick Nolenberger. In this episode, we'll recap the last three games with highlights, and we'll chat with Barracuda goaltender Zach Amon. On Saturday, the Barracuda hit the road for two games in Texas against the Texas Stars. The club had dropped seven straight before Saturday in six consecutive games on visiting ice. At 5:45 in the opening period, defenseman Cole Moberg got things started with his second of the year.
Petrovic can turn it over to Ben Gleason. Now near side, Moberg. His shot! He scores! Cole Moberg picks the low far side of the net, and he beats Adam Scheel. And the Barracuda draw first blood 5 minutes and 45 seconds into the opening period.
But just 15 seconds later, former Tucson Roadrunner forward Jeremy Gregoire would answer back for the Stars.
Mark Gault will hold. Played it right to Ciccone, now left it ahead. We've got a breakaway opportunity. Moving it, Gregoire scores!
And at 17:56 of the opening period, Ryan Shea would wire one in for his first AHL goal to give Texas a 2-1 lead.
Carlstrom down low, Tufte, back half wall, Carlstrom, near point for Shea. McGrew's out of the box, Shea high, slot scores!
Exactly 4 minutes into the second period, defenseman Mark Ault would snap one in to tie the game up at 2-2.
Texas Stars, early stages of the second period. Holpgoak circles away from traffic. Now scooped up by Merkley. Angle shot, Scheel makes the save. Puck is loose. Mark Ault loads up! He scores! Scheel made the initial save, but Mark Ault scoops it up as he pitched from the left point, waits it out, and a perfectly placed shot against the grain.
But at 7:42, Frederik Karlstrom would carry one up ice and beat Alexei Melnichuk to give Texas back its lead.
Able to get it back to center and back to safety, and they'll make a partial change. But here comes Karlstrom on a partial break, save made, rebound, scores!
The Barracuda would storm back, though, in the second period. While on the power play, Artemi Knyazov would put in his second of the year to level the score at 3-3.
Knyazov right side. Barracuda on the power play! He shoots! He scores! Artemi Knyazov, a perfectly placed shot through traffic. Parked in front was Jake McGrew.
Then at 15:16, Santeri Hatikka would pot his first AHL goal to give the Barracuda back their lead.
Knyazov has leveled the score on the power play. Now a 2-on-1 developing. Hatikka works in looking for his first! He scores! Santeri Hatikka has his first goal in a Barracuda sweater, and the Cuda have taken their lead back. It's 4-3.
And then San Jose would add on to its advantage as Kyle Topping would come out of the penalty box, receive a pass from Jasper Weatherby, and pot his first of the season.
Pass influenced and out of the box. Here comes Topping. Going to be a breakaway out of the penalty box. Forehand move! Oh my! What a finish, Topping! He scores! Kyle Topping coming out of the penalty box. Moves in all alone in a phone booth. And is able to beat Jurasik on the far side. I think Jurasik had to have been thinking he was going to go to the backhand. He tucks it in at the final moment and cashes in.
Up by two in the third period, Up by two in the third period, Texas would up by two in the third period. The Stars would cut into the Barracuda's lead as Anthony Lewis would put one in off the faceoff to make it a 5-4 advantage. But then at 13:34, John Leonard would put the Barracuda back up by two with his 11th of the season.
Shumalevsky for John Leonard. Back to the midpoint, Kinyazin. Near side, Leonard. Rink wide, Blickfeld. Dusts it off, shot off the back wall. Leonard scores! Blickfeld shot at the backboards, and it springs to the plate of Leonard, who one times at home.
The Stars would pull their goaltender down by two, and Curtis McKenzie would cut the lead down to one at 17:28 with his 13th of the year.
Remaining in the third, 6-4 lead for the Barracuda. Lesperance threw it on net, rebound, they score. Curtis McKenzie able to clean up the rebound.
Then at 19:38, still with their goaltender pulled, Tyler Dellandrea would pot his 10th of the season to force overtime.
Stars down by a goal, 6-5 lead for the Barracuda. 26 seconds remaining in regulation. Lesperance with the puck, top left circle, shoot, scores! Dellandrea may have tipped the puck. I think he did, the way the Stars are celebrating. The Barracuda with a two-goal lead in the third period. The Stars scored twice with their net empty.
Despite the Barracuda getting outshot 5-1 in overtime, the game would need a shootout to decide it. In the bottom of the third round of the shootout, Joachim Blickfeld would score the only goal to secure the 7-6 win.
Got 15 goals on the season. Works his way in. Scores! And the San Jose Barracuda, they got Harry. They had a two-goal lead late in the third. They squandered it.
The 7-6 victory marked the third time in franchise history in which the Barracuda were part of a game that ended with a 7-6 final. It also was the first time in franchise history in which four different defensemen found the back of the net. With the win, the Barracuda snapped their 7-game losing streak and their 6-game losing streak on the road. On Sunday, the two teams would run it back for game number 4 on the 4-game season series. After a scoreless first period, Nick Merkley would wait just 58 seconds into the second period to snap in his 7th of the year, ending a 13-game goalless drought.
Out of the box is Beck. We're back to full strength. The Barracuda do not record a shot on the power play. 41 seconds of power play time to start the second. Holmquist now collects a loose puck. Hands off now for Nick Merkley. Works it. Shoots! He scores!
The Stars would outshoot the Barracuda 17-3 in the second period. And at 16:05, Jeremy Gregoire would score his 7th of the year to tie the game back at 1-1.
Gregoire, Petrovic, skips free, winding up, rebound, they score. Jeremy Gregoire has goals in back-to-back games.
In the third period, Joel Lesperance would give the Stars their first lead at 3:31.
Back up high to the point, Shea winds up. That's blocked wide. Now near side, Lesperance shoots, scores.
Both teams would put 14 shots on net, but the Barracuda would fail to tie the game up. The Stars would add in a couple of empty netters to seal the 4-1 win. Zach Amon made 38 saves, a career high, but took the hard luck loss. On Wednesday, the Barracuda returned back to the SAP Center for the first of two games against the Bakersfield Condors. At 4:46 of the opening period, Raphael Lavoie got things started for the Condors.
Out of the box's hallway, Esposito, who's riding a nice little point streak entering tonight. Esposito's got a 5-game point streak, 7 points over that stretch. He's got the puck on his stick. Centers in front, controlled, and they shoot and score. Lavoie puts it under the crossbar. And the power play had expired, so it will be a 5-on-5 goal, but Raphael Lavoie goes top shelf, short side, and the Bakersfield Condors open up the scoring.
At 5:19, the Barracuda would take their second penalty of the first period, And this time, Seth Griffith would cash in to give Bakersfield a 2-0 lead.
Griffith will settle it down, and now it's intercepted. John Leonard could be a shorthanded chance. Works his way into the backhand, and he put it just wide. There was a little bit of space between Stuart Skinner and that right post, and Leonard just pushed it a hair wide. Now Caldas back into the old zone. Griffith shoots and scores. Seth Griffith on the power play.
Just moments later, at 9:18, James Hamblin would tip in a point shot as the Condors would jump out to a 3-0 advantage.
Guided up to the point. There's a shot from the left side by Philip Berglund blocked. 10:47 left in the first period. Back to the point it goes for Bakersfield. Thrown in on net, and they score. Hamblin tips it past Alexei Melnichuk. And the Bakersfield Condors have taken a 3-0 lead. We're not even to the halfway point of the opening period.
The Barracuda would finally go on to their first power play in the opening period at 13:51 as Philip Berglund was called for slashing. While on the man advantage, Jaden Holmgewachs will get the Barracuda on the board with his 13th of the season.
Jaden Holmgewachs, fourth-year pro, will skate it over the Shark logo. Gains the offensive line, flicks it off the end wall, rims it around for Peterson, right point. Lane Peterson, now for Nick Merkley. Center to front, they score! Just what the doctor ordered, Jake Holmgewachs on the power play, and the lead is cut down to 2.
Up 3-1, the Condors would push their lead back up to 3. At just the 27-second mark of the second period, Dylan Holloway would tip a shot from Dino Kambites past Alexei Melnichuk, and the Condors would go up 4-1.
Merkley, the Calgary native, will play it into the corner. Darnay will scoop it up, guided along near side. Kinyazov tried to pinch, and now Holloway down the right wing side into the offensive zone for a trailing Samarukov, and they score. Dino Kambites as the trailing forward skips it past Alexei Melnichuk. And the Bakersfield Condors take a 4-1 lead. They wait 27 seconds into this second period to push.
Back on the power play, Seth Griffith would find the net again for his 19th of the year at 3:24 to push Bakersfield's lead up to 5-1.
The most disciplined in the Pacific Division. Barracuda, meanwhile, 10th most penalties per game is shot by Griffith. He's got another one. It is 5-1 Bakersfield.
Later in the second period at 8:19, Jaden Holmgewachs would score again, his 14th of the season, to stop the bleeding and cut the lead down to 5-2.
And as an assist here tonight, Griffith tripped up in the neutral zone. No call on the play. Here comes the Barracuda. McGrew into the zone, shoots, and a good save. Skinner. Rebound, and they score. Holmgewachs, he's got another one.
But less than 2 minutes later, Tim Schaller would receive a drop pass from Cooper Marody and beat Alexei Melnichuk to push Bakersfield's lead to 6-2.
Put in on him, seems like it's giving him some trouble. As here comes Marody down the wing. He's got a trailing. Schaller scores. Tim Schaller pushes the lead back up to 4. It's now 6 goals against on Melnichuk.
That goal would end goaltender Alexei Melnichuk's night as he allowed 6 goals on 16 shots in 29 minutes and 57 seconds of action. In the third, down by 4, the Barracuda, well, they would go back onto the power play, and Nick Merkley would make it goals in back-to-back games with his 8th of the season.
Peterson up onto the point for Moberg. Left wing side for Nick Merkley. His shot, and he scores. Merkley's got goals in back-to-back games, and the Barracuda have another power play strike.
Unfortunately, after that point, the Barracuda could not muster any more offense, and they would fall in the game by a final score of 6-3. It was the team's first loss against Bakersfield this season on home ice. They are now 2-4 against the Edmonton Oilers affiliate. When we come back, we'll be joined by Barracuda goaltender Zach Amon. This is Cuda Confidential.
You're listening to Barracuda Hockey.
Welcome back. We are pleased to be joined by Zach Amon, Barracuda goaltender. Zach, first of all, thanks for the time. How are things going?
I'm doing good. You?
I'm doing well. Thank you again for hopping on. I'm sure it's been a strange year for you, being that this is your first full season of pro. You've been between a couple different leagues. You've played some games in the ECHL. You've played some games in the American Hockey League. You're back in the AHL as we speak. So how has that been, just adjusting to playing with different teammates, different cities, and just adjusting to the difference between junior and now pro?
Yeah, of course. I knew it would be like a harder first year. I mean, I need some time to adapt, but no, for sure. I think just going back and forth, I think that's the hardest thing. You gotta get used to it. And no, I mean, I think that as long as, I mean, once the season started, it was tougher at the start, but now it's better. I'm getting used to it. So no, I think, like I said, I knew it would be a harder first year, but I'm glad of my development so far.
Looking at the depth chart within the organization at the goalie position, did you see this as being a possibility, being that Zach Sochenko, Alexei Melnichuk were already under contract? There was a couple NHL guys already signed. Did you expect maybe that you would be pinballing between the ECHL and the AHL?
Well, yeah. I mean, you always think about it. But at the same time, like for me, I knew it would be the organization's decision because we all had the pretty much the same contract, which was an entry-level contract. So for me, it was just trying to do my best at camp. And that's what I tried to do. And then the decision was not mine. And so, yeah, I kind of knew it would be a possibility. And then so it happened. But I think nothing happens. I mean, everything happens for a reason. And no, I'm glad to just having some more experience and then just growing into this.
Do you have kind of a grasp on the amount of goalies that have played in the ECHL and in the American League before getting to the NHL? Because it seems like the goalie position, more so than forwards or defense, you see a lot more of them play games in the ECHL because of the value of just getting more reps. Even your goalie coach, Danny Sabourin, spent some time in the ECHL and then made the National Hockey League. So have you kind of looked at it as this is just somewhat of a traditional path for young goalies that sometimes they have to work through the ECHL before establishing themselves at the AHL level and then getting up to the NHL?
Yeah, of course. And that's what the coaches told me when they told me about the decision. I think Bones told me that he played with some very good goalies in the East Coast League, which, I mean, some goalies that are now starters in the NHL. So I know it's different for goalies, and no, I think, like I said, I'm just getting more experience and out of it, and I'm just playing more games. That's what I did in the first half of the season, and now I'm back here with the Barracuda. So.
Is it fun now that you're actually into the pro ranks before you get drafted, and then there's like this 2.5 year gap between you finally getting to the pro level where you're part of the organization, but you're not playing under the umbrella yet? Is it fun to now finally be wearing the teal sweater, you know, having a shark on your goal mask and being actually in the pro level within the organization?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when you get drafted and then you're only 18, for sure you're excited, but you know that you still have some time to play in juniors. And no, I mean, it's a special year for me because it's my first year pro, first team in the first year in the organization. And no, I'm just glad that it's starting for real now. I mean, I was coming here for development camps, training camps, knowing that I would go back to junior. But no, I mean, this year was different because I was just coming here. I didn't know exactly where I was going, but I knew it would be the start of something new for me.
We mentioned Danny Sabourin. He's your goalie coach with the Barracuda. He was your goalie coach back in junior as well. So you guys already had that established relationship. I know you guys are pretty close. Kind of describe to us how that relationship is, the communication on a regular basis. What are the type of things that you guys are talking about when it comes to the goalie position? And even when you were in the ECHL, I know he's still keeping tabs on you, even came and visited at one point. So describe to us a little bit that relationship.
Yeah, I mean, Danny, for me, is a very special person. I was glad to have him at the start of my junior career. I was 17 when he actually stopped playing as a goalie and then decided to become a coach. And that was at the same time that I came into the team. So we got into the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies at the same time. And since then, we just... We have been together, and no, like I said, we have a very good relationship. I think, yes, on the ice, but also off the ice, which is very important. I think that, I mean, I'm able to talk to with him about pretty much everything. I'm very comfortable speaking with him. So now we just understand each other very well after all those years together. And I think that really helps also to bring everything on the ice. And just we're pretty much always on the same page.
What do you make of the announcement of when he first got hired by the Sharks? I mean, I'm sure you were pretty excited thinking that you were going to continue that relationship, that work player relationship, even beyond your junior career.
Yeah, of course. I think the relationship between a goalie and his goalie coach is very, very important. And it's tough to start from zero when you get with a new coach. I think you have to get to know that person and then start to build on something. But I was just excited to see that I would just be able to continue working with him, because, of course, I was doing very well with him, and I was very, like I said, comfortable in our relationship. And for me, I was not imagining just stop to work with him. So I think it was just great news for me, and also for him. I was very happy for him that he could make that jump to pro as a coach.
We're talking to Zach Hamel and Barracuda goaltender. I know that Danny likes to bring you guys onto the ice a little bit early before practice, and he doesn't let up. It's hard. It's a physical, grueling one-on-one coaching setup with Danny. Describe to us, though, what goes into some of the on-ice stuff that you guys are doing. Because I think for fans, if you're really looking at it from an elementary standpoint, it's stop the puck. By any means, stop the puck. But there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more technical stuff to it. So describe to us some of the things that you guys are working on a daily basis.
Well, first of all, I think practices, I mean, the word says it. It's there to practice some techniques, some very precise stuff. But once you get in the game, you just gotta, like you said, stop the puck. So I mean, all those days of practice are there to just work on technique and work on very small details. And it's different for every goalies, but I think that that's why we spend a lot of time on the ice like that before practice, because then we could put some importance on those little details. And then once we're in the game, we don't think about it, and it just comes naturally. So I think that's the main thing about practice. I think during those days, we just put the emphasis on more the technical stuff. And then once we get to games, we just play naturally, because we know that we've been prepared very well during the week for that game. So we just have to play and stop the puck.
Going back to your junior career, you played with Sam Harvey, and you guys are about as opposite as it can come, to, especially from a physical standpoint. You're 6'3". Harves is, I would say, a little bit under 6 foot. So you're going to have different playing styles. So describe to us what Danny would be working with you on, being that you're a bigger goaltender that has that good traditional frame. And then maybe what would be the difference with a guy like Sam, who's going to be maybe a little bit laterally, he's going to be moving differently, he's a smaller guy, he's got to be a little bit more, I would say, aggressive. So describe just what the differences would be between two goalies with different physical attributes.
Yeah, I mean, every goalie is different. And even from a bigger goalie, I mean, you could have two very tall goalies that are going to play differently. So that's one thing that Danny's very good at. He's just open-minded about it. And I think that he's there to listen to us and then try to help us with our style of play. And then if he really thinks that something should be changed, then we're going to discuss about it. But I think that, yeah, like I said, it's just every goalie's like to play certain situations differently. And you just got to have some reps. You have to try it. And then if it doesn't work, you're going to change it. But I think that for Danny, it's important that every goalie just keep the way they plays, and then he just builds around it. And but you got to have a good structure. So if you start with a good structure, a good game plan, and then you can build around it, add some details. And that's pretty much the way we work.
There's been lots and lots of goalies who have hailed from Quebec. Patrick Waugh, Marc-Andre Fleury, Marty Brodeur. I mean, you can go down the list. Some of the greatest goaltenders of all time are from Quebec. So when you were a young kid and you were first getting into the position, who's the guy that you looked up to, you idolized it, and the guy that really sparked the drive and desire to become a goalie?
Well, first of all, it was my dad. I started being a goalie. I was four. And yeah, I mean, I was always at the rink watching my dad play because he was a goalie also. And then I knew that I would always want to be a goalie. And then so I started as soon as I could skate, I wanted to be a goalie. And then my dad said, oh, you got to learn to skate properly. So I played 1 year as a forward. And then at 4 or 5, I started being a goalie. And then I think that I was just looking at every goalies in the NHL when I was younger, trying to pick up some things of every one of them. But the first goalie that I was really watching and I loved the way he played was Marc-Andre Fleury. And then it developed to, I was watching a lot Montreal. So my biggest role model, I would say, is Carey Price. And I just hope that he's going to get back to play so I can watch him again. But so I think Fleury and Price were the two big guys that I would watch a lot.
I think we all, the hockey community, hopes that Price can come back, especially how things went down last year, him getting all the way to a Stanley Cup final. What do you think, as a fan, what makes Carey Price so effective? Why is this guy one of the best that's ever done it?
I think the way he understands the game, the way he reads it is off the chart. And that's why he makes everything look so easy. So, by example, last year in the playoffs, he was lights out and he pretty much carried Montreal. But it looked so easy for him because he was just calm and reading the game very well. So I think when you add that to his talent, the way he moves in the net, his tracking of the puck, then you have a pretty good package.
Going back to when you first started playing the position, what do you remember about the original set of gear that you wore? What were you rocking the first time you ever got net?
I think the brand was Cooper, but I'm not sure. And then I actually started with some outdoor hockey gloves and the mask also. So it was not very protective, but the shots were not very strong. So, and then after that, my dad got me my first real pair of Reeboks, which was RBK, I think. And then that's where it started. But no, I think I was playing a lot on the ice, but also in the street as a goalie. So I was just having two pair of pads. I would switch them all the time. But no, I spent a lot of time also in my basement, just playing as a goalie, and that was a lot of fun.
I don't know if you had any siblings growing up, but who was shooting the puck on you?
I didn't have any siblings, so I had to drag my dad down in the basement and say, come on, I need some shots. And no, he liked it. We were watching the hockey at the same time, so if we would watch Montreal, I don't know, I would just receive some shots during the breaks and then watch the game and then just do that the whole night. So it was a lot of fun.
Being from Quebec, playing in the Quebec League, I'm sure that was a goal of yours from an early age. When did it get on the radar that you would have an opportunity to maybe play major junior hockey? When did scouts start coming around? How did that all come to be?
I was always just enjoying playing hockey. I was going step by step. And then once I got to Bantam, I was like, oh, I want to make the midget AAA team. So that was my first goal. And then that team looked, that looked like a big goal for me at that time. And then I made the team and then I was 15. So that was after that season, it would be my draft for the Q. And then that's when I realized that I would probably get drafted. But like I said, it was always step by step for me. And yes, I would enjoy watching the QMJHL games. I would go to Rimouski, watch the Oceanic, and just watch those games. But I was just enjoying playing hockey and then going step by step. And then it got me here today.